right? So thank you for that. This morning, we are going to continue our series entitled Honest Prayers, where we've been going through a number of psalms, and we've been taking note how the psalmist, all the psalmists express their hearts honestly toward God. And some of these prayers are pretty raw prayers. Some of them are prayers of praise. Some of them are prayers of lament. We are now going to pray the Psalm 121, which is a psalm of ascent. Psalm 120 through 134 are called Psalms of Ascent. Now, why that? Because they were used by the pilgrims traveling to Jerusalem to the temple for one of the three yearly festivals. I put the verse down where we kind of get this idea of where why they have to go. In Deuteronomy 16:16, way back in the Old Testament, we read, three times a year, all your men must appear before the Lord your God at the place he will choose, at the festival of unleavened bread, the festival of weeks, and the festival of tabernacles. No one should appear before the Lord empty-handed. And they were needed once there was a temple. It used to be a tabernacle, which was a kind of a traveling temple. And this the temple was then the place where they were to go to bring these their offerings and their hearts to God. In general, these psalms are called psalms of ascent because ascent is about going up. And Jerusalem's built on a hill, so you had to go up. But there's a spiritual component to that too, about spiritually going up. You know, it's one of the fun parts of writing a sermon. You start researching. I read some stuff, you know, some speculate that the Psalms of Ascent, Psalm 120, 134, are some of the steps of the temple. And there are 15 steps and 15 psalms. And then you have this picture of the Levites on the harps and the lyres and trumpets and songs being sung and people going up these stairs. And you have this amazing worship moments. So that's kind of the picture here. The message of these psalms is that Jerusalem is a place for God's people to come together to worship the Lord their God, to confess, to give thanks, to remember God's mighty acts of the past and his ongoing and forever presence. And with that in mind, and I know it was read to you once, but let's read it again, Psalm 121. Read it with me. I will lift up my eyes to the hills, to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. And we see two voices in the psalm, verse 1 and 2. We have this question asked, where did my help come from? Then you have this confession by this individual or a group of travelers. And then verse 3 through 8, we have this response by possibly a priest, people not traveling, maybe friends and relatives, and they say those other things in verse 3 through 8. I want you to imagine these travelers from all over the place, far and wide. Remind yourself, travel is by foot. Right? There's no cars, no rapid transit, nothing like that. And these people are from all over the place, even outside of Israel. Most are simple folk, coming from small villages, farms, hardworking people, families, most not rich. And they come a long way to go to the temple. To what? To lift up their eyes. To lift up their eyes to the hills of Jerusalem, to the temple of God. There's a lot of hills, though, on the way for getting to Jerusalem, and those hills have threats. There's robbers in them. We think of the parable of the Good Samaritan, where the Good Samaritan finds a beat-up man. He was robbed in the hills. That's the picture there. In the ancient world, the hills, they're often called high places. And they are places for pagan gods and spirits, and their shrines scattered through the hills. My wife and I had the privilege of going to Israel, Egypt, and Jordan on a trip. And when we were in a place called Petra, some of you might know it from Raiders of the Lost Ark, this amazing kind of a place to see. But anyways, we were going to Petra, then we walked around Petra for quite a while, and then our guide said, hey, you want to go to up to a high place? And we went up the side path, and we climbed way up. There's these steps carved in. I was one of the old guys, so I was slowing everybody down. But we made it to the top, and there was one of these high places, and you can see kind of the ruins, and you could see where there was probably sacrifices. They had little canals for the blood to run. I mean, it was one of these high places for a false god. And the psalmist says, I lift up my eyes to the hills. And we might ask, well, which hills? Which hills? The ones that promise power aside from Yahweh or not? Israel had this problem quite often. If you go through your Old Testament, they got sidetracked by false gods. They had the Asherah poles and you know, Baal worship, and a lot of that was done on hills. And so, yeah, where are you lifting your eyes? Which hills? And this psalmist says, no, I'm not. I'm lifting my eyes to the hills. Yeah, I'm doing that. But not to look for the hills for anything, but to the maker of those hills, the maker of heaven and earth. That's who I'm lifting my eyes up to. I'm not getting caught up in the hills. I'm getting caught up in the maker of those hills. In the Apostles' Creed, a document or a confession that binds Christian churches together, we start off, I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. Let's define who we're talking about here. God the Father Almighty. Which one? The maker of heaven and earth. That one. That's where my help comes from. Not from some false gods we've created, not from some self-help plan I made, not from some lie I'm embracing and pretending it's the truth. No. The maker of heaven and earth. That's where my help comes from. And that phrase occurs a couple of times in some other places in the Songs of Ascent, because it's one of the central truths. We worship the maker of heaven and earth. That's our God. And if we're going to go up, which is the picture here, up, Allah, up, the Hebrew word for up, then we need to keep our eyes on that. And that theme comes through. I put some, there's lots of references. Isaiah 40, 26, the prophet says, lift up your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one, calls forth each of them by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing, right? That God. In the New Testament, in the book of Hebrew, we read, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witness, let's throw off everything that distracts and hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles. Let's run our race with perseverance, the race marked out for us. And here we go. Fixing our eyes, where? On Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and he sat down at the right hand of God the Father Almighty. The Lord is our helper. Lift your eyes to him. And it's not automatic, because we're easily distracted. The Lord is our helper. The Hebrew word is Ezer, E-Z-E-R. It's 65 times mentioned in the Old Testament. One story about the Ebenezer stone, right? You can look that up. The stone of help. This is our God. The word helper was also used for Eve, right? And sometimes I think we downgrade the word help. You know, think, well, helpmate, you know, as if it's an inferior position. It refers to God. The God is our Ezer, our help. You know, Eve was Adam's help. This is a profoundly powerful statement to be one's help. It's so easy for us to get distracted by the struggles we face. Yeah, there's bandits in those hills, no doubt about it. Yeah, the sun is beating down on us. Water is scarce. We you know, traveling has its risk. When my wife and I, when we walked through some of this territory, when we were in Palestine and Israel, and we walked through the territory, and I mean, this is a stark land, intense heat. Not this 30 degree lightweight stuff. Intense heat, right? 40 was fairly normal. right? You know, and then you got to do stuff. Yeah, the Lord will keep you from all that. The Lord will keep you. I like that picture. Will keep you. The Hebrew word has a sense of watch over, protect. The word occurs 6 times in those 8 verses of Psalm 121. God is active. The psalmist lists his attributes, right? He keeps you from slipping because we tend to slip, right? He's always on the watch. He shelters you from the sun and the moon. Maybe some of you wonder, like, why are we talking about the moon? I mean, the sun I get, right? It beats down on you, but the sun and the moon represent deities. You think of Egypt, Ra, he was a sun god. Mesopotamian god, Nana, moon god, doesn't mean grandma. Grandmas are not deities, even though they might like to be sometime, but they're not. The picture here is the word, is the moon caused mental illness in a way. We get our word lunatic. You have the word lunar, lunatic. I even put one verse down, Matthew 4:24, out of the King James. Just look at it with me. And Jesus' fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought unto him all sick people that were taken with diverse diseases and torments, and those who were possessed with devils, and those which were lunatic, and those that had palsy, and he healed them. But you hear that word lunatic, moonstruck. And the psalm is saying, Yahweh protects us from all evil. All evil, whatever's out there. Travelers surely observed these other worship sites, right, devoted to these other gods, whose followers claimed ordered the cosmos. And to say God is our helper, the maker of heaven and earth, is to declare that these other gods are imposters. The psalmist says our God doesn't sleep. It's interesting, if you're really a student, you're going to find out that there are some psalms which talk about God sleeping. So then don't come back to me and say later on, and say, hey, wait a minute, you said God doesn't sleep. Remember, these are honest prayers, and there are times when the psalmist says, I don't know why God's not responding to my needs, he must be sleeping, right? And there's that honest praying going on there. But the psalmist here says, God doesn't sleep. In other words, he doesn't stop watching over you. For these other gods, they slept. Sometimes it was a seasonal thing, right? They slept for a long period of time or died sometime, and then it was winter. And we have the stories, the mythological stories of explaining the seasons that way. Israel's God is ever vigilant, and he's your shade. Really important in a hot area, especially as you travel in that heat. And this protective shade God that God offers us, it's not a guarantee that we're not going to face any struggles. No, rather, it is God's abiding presence in the midst of those struggles. With any hill or mountain, there are valleys, right? And you go down, now you're in a valley. In dark places, and God's there too. It made me think of Psalm 23. I put the one verse on there, Psalm 23, verse 4. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me, right? And we have that picture of this God going with us through the darkest places, often used at funerals, because God goes through the valley of the shadow of death, and he sees it through the other side. So some of you know those dark places, and I hope you know that God is there with you, leading you to the other side. These psalmists know there's many dangers. There's diseases, there's injury, war, disaster, depression, theft, evil, falsehood. And he asks, where does my help come from? Where does my help come from? Which is the right question to ask right from the start. It's a good place to start. People of God, let me ask you this. When you face life's challenges and hardships, where does your help come from? Where does your help come from? You can look to the hills. You can look to false gods and lies. Or you can look to your maker, your creator, who is your keeper and your helper as you come and go, and he watches over your whole life now and forever. In Jewish life, Psalm 121, particularly verse 7 and 8, let me read it to you once more, verse 7 and 8. Let's just jump to it here. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He'll watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. In Jewish life, that verse was posted in the delivery room or in the child's room. It was said as people left to go travel. I mean, what a wonderful blessing. Yes, there's lots of threats, but our God, our helper, our keeper, he's always with us. Journeying is a good picture of what life is. We journey. I love the stories of Abraham, right? Abraham left home for a promised land and a promised people. He was going to get, you know, as far as this, you know, this, the sand of the shore and the stars in the sky. That's how many descendants you're going to have here. When Abraham died, he had one son and a burial plot. A far cry from a great land and great people. I put Hebrews 11. If you want to read a psalm, we'll talk about journeys. Look, Hebrews 11. This is about Abraham. Hebrews 11, 8. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. Right, Abraham, I want you to go. Where? Just go. Okay. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to a city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. He had his eyes focused. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was unable to bear a child because she considered him faithful who made the promise. And so from this one man, as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sands on the seashore. And all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. We are traveling through for now. And this God promises us his protection and his presence from this time forward and forevermore for life's whole journey. From baptism to death. I've had the privilege of being a pastor for a long time and seeing people who I baptized bury their parents. And the promise of the Lord's presence was in that baptism, and the promise of the Lord's presence was in that death, and everything in between. Psalm 121 is such a comforting psalm in so many circumstances, often recited in significant times, reminding those listening to lift their eyes. Sonia prayed for anxiety. I went through a period of pretty devastating anxiety in my life and had a hard time carrying on. Needed a lot of support. This psalm meant a lot to me at the time. You know, lift up your eyes to the hills, you know, and because my tendency in my anxiety was to look down, to look at what was wrong, look at how I couldn't manage, look. I lift up my eyes to the hills. Oh, look at those hills. Look at those mountains. And I'd look at the mountains. I'd look outside. I'd see the mountains. From where does your help come? Not looking down here. From where does your help come? It comes from, well, not those mountains, but from the maker of those mountains. And I felt some encouragement in thinking that way. Lift up your eyes to the hills, to the Lord, to the maker. It's interesting, though, sometimes that's hard to do, and it made me think of Psalm 3, which I preached on in July. Psalm 3:3, notice what it says here. But you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head high. And isn't that a beautiful picture? Sometimes I can't do this. And I need the Lord to lift my head, and I see a parent, and the kid is crying, and the kid is hurt, and he's looking down, and that parent comes down on the knee and lifts that kid's head up and says, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. That's the picture. The Lord lifts your head up and says, now you see who's with you. Now you see who's with you. Lift your eyes, and the Lord will help you do that too, to the Maker who is always at work. And so these pilgrims traveled to see the face of the Lord in the temple. And they traveled through a particular landscape. Their minds, their hearts, their bodies were involved. I like that picture too. I like that the body and the mind and everything is involved. Pilgrimages. Some people do something called the El Camino, which is in Europe and Spain and France, I think. I went to a place called Iona, island of Scotland. And you have these pilgrimages. I read stories of priests, you know, poor priests on the coast of Scotland. They'd hop into a boat, they'd put up a sail, and they'd just float. And the idea that God's going to lead me where I need to go. I'm not sure that's a great idea. I'd like a bit more plan than that. But you know, I've heard of, and I've done it myself too, gone to the mission in mission. Right, and go for a prayer walk. I mean, I like that our bodies, our minds, our whole being gets to be part of it. And I think, you know, going to Jerusalem, right? Yeah, we were blessed with a trip to Jerusalem. We walked the lands Jesus walked. I mean, we walked where Mount Nebo, where Moses went up his last climb. But the body was involved, and the head and the heart. Do some prayer walks. Right, I had one with my dogs when I had two big dogs, and again going through a bit of a tough time. And I'd do the same walk every day, and I had this big rock that I'd sit on and let the dogs run loose. And it was my prayer walk. It was my prayer rock as well. I think it's why it's essential for us to get together and actually get up, and actually go, and actually drive, and actually have to do the physical stuff to get here. I think that's important. I really do. This psalm begins with the world as it is, full of uncertainties, a daunting world. And it starts with a state of helplessness. Where does my help come from? Because I need help, right? I love that start here. The exact state we should be starting each day with. You get up in the morning, look in the mirror, recover from that sight, and then stay, all right, here's today. Where's my help going to come from today? Start the day that way. Where am I going to look for help today? Because I'm going to need help. Right? It's such a wonderful thing. Is it going to come from my maker or from hills? And then we hear the voice of our community. And again, in the beginning, where does my help come from? And then verse 3 through 8. Well, hey, the community shouts out, God is our helper. Remember that. He's our keeper. Remember that. Now and forever. And I need to hear that from you. And you need to hear that from one another. God is our helper. God is our keeper. Lift your eyes to the maker of the hills. These pilgrims travel together affirming God's presence, because sometimes if we're on our own, we don't feel it. Travel together recalling the ways in which God had cared for them in the past, binding them together as a community of past and present and future. That's why I love it. Hebrews 12, which says, we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. Right? I love that as we did the baptism today. Miles is surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, including the ones of the past. The ones who have gone on and live in glory. Those two. But this moment, you are a cloud of witnesses to one another. And you witness to God's mighty acts when I might forget. And we walk together and we sing together, united by a common purpose and a shared destination. A shared destination. All of us need to be encouraged to lift up our eyes to the one who watches over all our comings and goings now and forever, knowing who's in charge. I'll finish with a couple of verses that Jesus talked about lifting up heads. The first verse in Luke 21, Jesus is talking about the end of times. The end of times. And, you know, you may say, okay, when time... So, in other words, you know, there is going to be an end, and Jesus will return. We anticipate that we live in the in-between, right, between the cross and the end of times here. And Jesus is saying, okay, you can get caught up in looking around at all kinds of things. But then he says this, when these things, all the end of time stuff, begin to take place, stand up, and now here we go, lift up your heads because your redemption is drawing near. Sometimes we can get caught up in all the activities we have around us, and I know we have to deal with life. But we forget to look up and say, we are actually on a destination that goes forever. And at some point, your physical journey is going to end here. But the journey carries on. And so while we're at it, then Jesus is in John 4:35. He's talking about, so what do we do here? Do not say then, there are yet 4 months, then comes the harvest. Lord, look, I tell you, lift up your eyes and see that the fields are white for harvest. Now what are we lifting up our eyes for? We're lifting up our eyes to look around. Who's the harvest? All the people around you. That's the harvest. God is saying, those are hearts that need to be refocused. Those are heads that need to be lifted up. Get out there. Show them that I love them. Don't just go amongst your task without ever looking up and remembering the grand task that you've been called to. May your head be lifted up to see the one who made it all. And may you be busy inviting others onto that journey. Let's pray.